Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. You're seeing Wednesday, huh? Well, we're back to regular scheduled time next Tuesday with this show, live from Cleveland, Ohio. It's the American Sports History Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Peter Ray. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing it in Los Angeles. Show goes quick, 347-205-9631, if you want to shoot it right in there. Otherwise, catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you spread the podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, it's more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic. First off, Peter, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, you're bringing a guy in here, boy, that's done some wonders across the airwaves and the country and stuff, and so glad to be seeing him back in here, originally from Philadelphia. I'll give it over to you. I'll man the boards, and, man, I can't wait for you two guys to get in on it.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter J. R-E-A. You're absolutely right. Tonight's guest was actually on the podcast more than 2 years ago. He's an author, historian, podcaster, poet, lyricist, traveler, thinker, dreamer, member of the World Party, and he's written four amazing sports history books, Bench Bosses, the NHL's Coaching Elite 2015, The Art of the Dealers, the NHL's Greatest General Managers 2017, Lords of the Gridiron, College Football's Greatest Coaches 2019, and Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches, just came out this year. Welcome to the show, Mr. Matthew DiBiase.
Peter, Mark, it's great to be. It's great to talk to you guys. I love you both, and it's an honor and privilege to be on the show, and I can't wait to answer your questions, Peter.
You know, I was just thinking your book is, you know, the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, this is what you've done is tremendous because, you know, this is American sports history, and you've basically, your new book is a history of pro football as seen through the greatest coaches. So to me, it's just so cool, and you've got 50 guys, you listed the top 50, and we don't have to rush through it. I want you to have you back multiple times because this is such a wonderful topic, so we don't need to hurry. First of all, we'll see how many guys we get through tonight. First of all, Matthew, can you give us an overall description of this new book you came out with?
It was the logical progression from my third book, Lords of the Gridiron, College Football's Greatest Coaches, which I created for that book a four-tiered rating system using four standards of excellence: career value, average season rating, best five consecutive seasons, and your best five seasons overall to rank and rate the 50 greatest college football Division I-A coaches of all time. And no one had ever done that before. I mean, it's like, well, I think I mentioned this before, you know, Peter. I have this philosophy, history abhors a vacuum. And with all four of my books, I've always endeavored to fill a gap in history. In other words, these books have never been done before. In other words, you know, actually attempting to rate and rank the 50 greatest NHL head coaches of all time, to rate and rank 50 greatest NHL general managers of all time. I mean, that's the first of its kind, not just in hockey literature, but in sports literature as a whole. No one has ever attempted to rate general managers in, like, either baseball or football or basketball or hockey. So mine was literally a groundbreaking work, and my college football book was groundbreaking. No one had ever tried to actually compare and contrast who was better, Nick Saban or Bear Bryant. Who was better, Woody Hayes versus Bo Schembechler? You know, and that's what my third book did. And I thought it was logical. Let's go with the pros now, because I can only think of one author who actually tried to rank and rate the 50 greatest NFL head coaches of all time, and that's a Facebook friend of mine, Mr. Sean Lehman, who came out in 2007 with the Pro Football Historical Abstract. He attempted to do that, but when I looked at his method, I thought I discovered some flaws in it. He failed to award points for finishing first in the league, and to my mind, a key omission was he failed, and this was my personal breakthrough with my three previous books. he failed to quantify failure. And that was my key discovery. It's not only possible to quantify and evaluate success, you can also quantify failure as well. In other words, how many times did you fail to make the playoffs? How many times did you have a losing season? To what degree were your losing seasons? I mean, I created a plus-minus system for all four of my books where, okay, if you had a winning season, you gain X amount of points, but if you had a losing season, then you lose X amount of points. And it was symmetrical and balanced. It was a sliding scale. The bigger your losing season, the more points that were taken off from you. And also, if you failed to make the playoffs, you lost points. And if you finished in last place, you lost points. And with my college football book, I created that system. And also, I added a little innovation. I also deducted points if you lost a major college bowl game. And you also, I deducted points if you lost a minor college bowl game there too. So it measured, it also evaluated how well did you, you know, perform in bowl games. That's like Bo Schembechler, my third book, finished rather low in the 40s, not as high as one would expect because he kept losing all those bowl games. I mean, that was his cross there. Whereas the ones who finished higher, they did very good in bowl games there. You know, Bear Bryant, you know, Nick Saban, and you know, Urban Meyer, and so on and so forth. And I took that to the pros. I, you know, created a sliding scale where you're awarded points based on your winning percentage in a given season. Whereas if your winning percentage was above 750, you got 8 points. If you made the playoffs, you got 4 points. If you're first in your division, you get 6. Make it to the Super Bowl, you get 13 points. And, of course, winning the Super Bowl, you get 14 points. And also, I had a system where if you failed to make the playoffs, you lost a point. If your winning percentage was only slightly above 450, you lost 2 points and so forth. And my other breakthrough was if you lost the Super Bowl or the championship game, you lost 14 points. I mean, my attitude was, if winning the Super Bowl is the ultimate prize, losing the Super Bowl was the ultimate failure, as it were. And I just ran all the eligible NFL coaches through the system. And to be eligible, you had to coach a minimum of 5 seasons in the NFL. And I came out, and the end result is this book, you know, Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches. And I'm ready to talk about, you know, coaches 1 through 5. If you want to fire a question at me, Peter.
First, we have a few comments. Darren from Germantown, Pennsylvania. Great show with you, Peter and Matt. Does anyone want to write a book on relief pitchers? That would be something.
Well, I don't really focus on players. My thing has always been about coaches. I mean, if you wanted to talk about relief pitchers, go to Bill James's Pro Baseball Historical Abstract if you want to talk about relief pitchers. I mean, my focus has always been on the coaching aspect because, again, no one has ever really dealt in that area before. Yes, there have been biographies of coaches, but no one has ever really tried to use analytics with regards to, you know, evaluating coaches. I mean, Bill James tried it with major league managers in the mid-90s, but even I had some issues with some of his methods and all of that. And of course, Sean Layman did it with pro football coaches. But that about individual players, no, I'm not getting into that. I don't touch that.
Rex from Warren, Ohio. I'm a big Notre Dame guy, but this team is no good. Brian Kelly left us high and dry.
Yeah, well, you know, Kelly, don't laugh, before he made a switch, I had him in the mid-50s, you know, according to my calculations. I mean, let's see, last season, I'm trying to where did I have him here? He was like, but, you know, taking that LSU job, that's going to cost him. I mean, let's see, where did I have him here? Kelly. Where the heck is he? I had him at rank 62, but considering he's getting off to a bad start, he's probably going to sink, you know, in the ratings a little bit. I mean, that's where he had before he left Notre Dame, but I think he just made a big mistake leaving there. He should have stayed with Notre Dame, in my view.
Craig from Marlborough, Massachusetts. The best coaches reside in Boston, Casey Jones and Bill Belichick.
Well, you know, if my book, which just came out on September 1st, had been released a year ago or 2 years ago, guess what? Bill Belichick would have been ranked at number one. The only reason why I have him at number two was because the last 2 seasons, 2020, the COVID season where the Patriots had a losing season, and last year where they failed to win the divisional title and they failed to go deep in the playoffs. That hurt him, and that damaged him in the average season rating category, which measures quality of success. He actually lost some points, and he dropped down a rank. And before the last season began, he was in a dead heat with Paul Brown for the top spot. Actually, he was in the top spot due to winning percentage. Actually, this cost him. It reduced his winning percentage, and also he fell behind Paul Brank on the average season rating. I mean, Brown was ranked fifth, and now Belichick is ranked sixth. What Belichick needs to regain the top spot is he needs to have another dominant regular season and hopefully pull off another Super Bowl triumph. That's what he needs to do to regain the top spot. It's not impossible, but he's got to do it. I mean, the opening season loss with Miami, that kind of hurt him a bit, you know, right now, because he just lost an intradivisional game to Miami. I mean, he's 1-1 now, but he's got to put it together. I mean, he's really got to put it all together. Thing is, he's going up against Buffalo, who are just absolutely white hot with power and passion and all that. It's going to be a tough struggle for Bill Belichick.
Ron from Bellingham, Washington. Where do you have these guys? John Wooden, Greg Popovich, Phil Jackson, Vince Lombardi, Chuck Knoll, and Nick Saban.
Well, Nick Saban is number one in the college football ranks. I mean, he's been number one since my book came out, and he's maintained that number one ranking, and no one's even close. I mean, right now the only active coach who's close to him is Dabo Swinney, and Dabo Swinney's in the top 15. He's not even top 10 yet. You know, I mean, Saban's, of course, the greatest college football coach of all time. Now, was it you mentioned John Wooden?
Yeah, John Wooden.
Well,
you haven't gotten into that yet.
Well, I just got to say to the gentleman out there, you're going to have to wait till 2029 to know the answer where John Wooden ranks among college basketball coaches. Because if I live that long in 2029, I will come out with a book revealing the 50 greatest college basketball coaches of all time. Who are the others? Greg Popovich in the NBA?
Greg Popovich, yeah.
Well,
Bill Jackson.
Yeah, well, for those two guys, if you be patient and wait exactly 4 years from now, in October 2026, my book, Men in the Huddle, Pro Basketball's Greatest Coaches, will come out, and you will know where Greg Popovich and Phil Jackson are, you know, in the pantheon. I mean, right now, both men are in the top five, and I'm not going to give away where they are, but they're definitely top five as it is right now. Okay? It might change from 4 years from now. Okay? And who's the other coach you mentioned?
Vince Lombardi and Chuck Knoll.
Okay. Now, Vince?
You got Lombardi 4 and Knoll 8.
Yeah, okay. Why the four spot? One reason is this. Lack of longevity. Remember, Vince only coached 10 seasons and he died of cancer. That's the tragedy of it all. Had he been able to coach like 15 seasons or so, I think he would have ranked even higher in the pantheon. Maybe not number one, but I think he would have been like third, maybe even second perhaps, you know, and all of that. But it's simple. He only coached 10 seasons, and the three coaches who are above him, Brown, Belichick, and Halas, you know, they have coached over 20 years for each. Halas coached for 40 years, Brown over 20 years, Belichick over 20 years. I mean, just the sheer longevity of it managed to outstrip Lombardi and, you know, and career value and playoff value, regular season value. It was that lack of longevity on Vince Lombardi's part. But I have to say this. And in terms of the postseason era, which is from 1933 to the present time, Vince Lombardi, in terms of getting maximum effort from his players, was the greatest coach of all time in that category. You know, consistent maximum effort. No one outdid him, okay, in terms of the postseason era from 33 to the present time. He was the greatest of all time in that regard there. I mean, it's just his ability to maintain that high is just extraordinary. The fact that he won three consecutive championship games from 65 to 67, which no one has ever done in the postseason era. I mean, to equal his record today, you have to win three consecutive Super Bowls, and no one has ever done that. And to surpass him, you have to win four consecutive Super Bowls. I think that achievement alone, those three consecutive championship game wins, you know, from the 65 NFL championship game and the wins in Super Bowls 1 and 2, I think is one of the most extraordinary coaching achievements of all time. But then Vince Lombardi was that extraordinary a man. I mean, he was just an absolute force. And I think the secret is that he understood the human equation so much better than almost all the other coaches, you know, his peers or those who have followed after him. I mean, others were better on the X's and O's, like Tom Landry, but the problem with Tom Landry is that he never really mastered the human equation. That's usually why Dallas always lost all those big ones, especially in those early years with Dallas and all that. But Lombardi, he only lost one championship game, and the fact he won 9 consecutive postseason games, which is still the NFL record. Still the NFL record. That's another extraordinary accomplishment. I think as a testament that he knew how to maintain that high. And, you know, his players never let down after that. He lost his first postseason game, and he never lost another. And I think that's testament to his character, you know, just finding the right, you know, always pushing the right buttons, knowing when to turn it on and when to turn it off, you know, when to be intense and when to be funny and all of that. I mean, that was the crux of his genius.
Frank from Mesa, Arizona, love the 2026 reference, Men in the Huddle. I need a new coach at Arizona State. Herm Edwards got an unfair firing in my book.
Yeah, well, I don't know about, you know, Herm Edwards, you know, like college football and all that. I forget where I have him. And I don't even know if he's on my charts or anything like that. I don't know if he's coached. On my college football charts, you have to coach a minimum of at least 10 seasons in Division 1A ball. He's not even on my charts yet. I don't think he's got 10 seasons at the Division 1A level. So I can't evaluate where he ranks at the present time, you know, for Arizona State and all that. Okay.
Denise from San Francisco. Hi, Peter. Really enjoy your show. Thanks, Denise. Thank you so much. Stan from Austin, Texas. My Longhorn season is done. Quarterbacks are done playing with a third stringer now.
Well, I've got some Texas coaches, you know, in my college football book. I mean, Darrell Royal, I got him presently ranked 13th on the all-time list there. When I was doing Darrell Royal, my chapter on him, I interviewed two old Texas Longhorns great, Ernie Coy Jr., who played on the 1963 Longhorns National Champion, and Ted Coy, who was part of that 1969 National Championship team that played in the famous Game of the Century against Arkansas. And we had a nice, long, loving conversation about that, him talking about meeting President Nixon and all that. And we talked about Darrell Royal. And that, if you go to buy my book, which is up on Amazon, just, you know, Lords of the Gridiron, College Football's Greatest Coaches, you can read that chapter on Darrell Royal, and you can get the insights of both men about what it was that made Darrell Royal the great coach that he was.
Okay, now that we've gotten through comments, let's start on your list of 50. Again, there's no hurry. It's 7:04. We got 13 minutes, so because I want to have you back once a month. Let's talk about Paul Brown. You're ranked number one.
Yes. Again, before the advent of Bill Belichick, Paul Brown was the greatest NFL head coach of all time. I mean, you could say he literally invented modern pro football coaching as we know it. The idea of coaching as a teaching job. I mean, basically, football is a classroom instruction. I mean, his coaching tree has got to be the greatest pro football coaching tree of all time. So many great men came out of it. Chuck Knoll, Bill Walsh, George Seifert, you know, Blanton Collier, and others, and their generations. I mean, his influence is still felt today. The use of the draw play, signal guards, you know, he created that. The fact that he led his team in his first 10 seasons of pro coaching to 10 consecutive championship games? I mean, okay, 4 in the AAFC, but even in the NFL, 6 consecutive championship games? And he won 7 out of 10? That is, even Lombardi never equaled that. And in the present-day Super Bowl, I mean, right now, Marv Levy led his men to 4 consecutive Super Bowl appearances. He lost all 4. I mean, that's still a record, you know, 4 consecutive Super Bowl appearances. But to surpass Paul Brown, you have to lead your men to, you know, 11 consecutive Super Bowl appearances just to surpass that. I mean, that's ungodly. It's insane. I mean, I have him third all-time in terms of career value, which measures the quantity of your success. fifth all-time in terms of the average season rating, which measures the quality of your success. He's number one in your best five consecutive seasons and also your best five seasons overall. He's tops there. Second in playoff value, second only to Bill Belichick in that regard. In other words, how well you performed in the playoffs, and fourth all-time in regular season value. And actually, he lost points during the latter stages of his career, you know, after 57, where he had some mediocre seasons with the Cleveland Browns. And, of course, his struggles to get the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, off the ground as an expansion franchise and all of that. But, I mean, right now he's number one, barring a comeback by Bill Belichick. I mean, it was always George. He surpassed George Halas, and he's maintained that number one spot. I mean, for 2 years, Bill Belichick was number one in 2019 and in 2020. But after 2021, Belichick sank a little bit, you know, and now he's number two behind Paul Brown. And so that's, you know, but Brown was just a genius. I mean, he just, in terms of organization, discipline, I mean, every year was the same lessons. You know, you learn the same play, you learn the same plays. I mean, what undermined him was that the loss of Otto Graham. After Otto Graham retired in 55, he never could find an adequate replacement for Otto Graham. He had Jim Brown, but he never really established a passing game to complement Jim Brown's, you know, magnificent running. And the play calling got wooden-headed near the end of, you know, Brown's coaching career in Cleveland. And finally, Art Modell had enough, and he fired him. And but Brown just hung on, and then he, out of scratch, he created the Cincinnati Bengals and reestablished himself, you know, first in the AFL, and then, in, you know, and when the merger came along. And by his third season, the Cincinnati Bengals were winners and playoff contenders. I mean, again, a measure of his genius. He gave, you know, Bill Walsh a key start, you know, with the Bengals, and helped Bill Walsh, you know, and Bill Walsh helped develop the West Coast offense, you know, when he was with Cincinnati there. Yeah, and the only big mistake he made was allowing Bill Walsh to succeed him as head coach of the Bengals. That's a fatal error. I mean, ever since then, the Bengals have never won a Super Bowl. They've had three Super Bowl appearances, but they've never won the big one. So in a sense, it's kind of like a curse, you know, when you think about it.
Chris from Pensacola, Florida. Hey, Matt, where do you have your Philly guys? Doc Rivers, Dick Vermeil, Dallas Green. Can't put any of your Flyers on this list. They just love to fight too much. Good luck with Torricella this year.
Well, in my hockey book, Fred Sherrill was way up there. I had him in the top 10. People forget Fred Sherrill was one bloody great hockey coach there. So you got to give Fred Sherrill his due. I mean, he was visionary. I mean, he managed to beat the big bad Boston Bruins in 74 through his tactical genius, his idea of just let Bobby Hull carry the puck at all times. He beat that Soviet Red Army team when they came to America using 1990s trapping techniques just to beat the Russians and all that. I mean, even the Montreal Canadiens, that won the Stanley Cup that year, didn't beat the Russians. All they could do was eke out a tie. Fred Shearer beat the Russians, man, you know. I mean, Shearer was a great coach. Now, and Dick Vermeil, he's not top 50 in my book. I mean, I know he's in the he just got inducted at Pro Football Hall of Fame, but no, I don't have him there. I got him ranked 57th because, yeah, he coached that Super Bowl winner with the Rams. But the thing was, Vermeil was always doing rebuilding projects. I mean, he had some bad losing seasons with the Eagles in his first couple of years there. Yeah, he took him to the Super Bowl, but remember, he lost that Super Bowl, and that cost him some points. If he had won that Super Bowl, I think he could, Super Bowl 15, he could have had a better odds, you know, cracking the top 50. Then he went with the Rams, and again, he had to do some rebuilding there. I mean, yeah, he won the Super Bowl championship with them, but the biggest mistake he ever made, and he later admitted this himself and to the press, is that he quit. He retired as a coach from the Rams there. He later said he should have stayed on, and if he had stayed on and gotten the exact same results as his successor Mike Martz did, who did very good, you know, the first three or four seasons after Vermeil left, I think Dick Vermeil would have been featured in my book in the top 50. And then also he came back with the Kansas City Chiefs, and he had some bad seasons with them, and that really dragged him down a bit. Now, Doc Rivers will be featured in my pro basketball book that will come out exactly 4 years from now. I'm not going to tell you where he ranks, but though he ranks very high, I think I got him in the top 15 right as it is right now. You know, he's definitely going to be up there. And who else was mentioned there?
Dallas Green.
No, he's not even amongst my top 50 Major League managers. I mean, when I write my Major League Baseball book, which will come out April 2026, Dallas Green will not be in the top 50. I know that for certain. Yeah, that very much. Because he caught lightning in the Federal in 1980, but the rest of his managerial career wasn't really much. I mean, he struggled with the Cubs. He struggled with the Mets. It really dragged him down. And who else was mentioned, Peter?
Tortorella. I don't know. Who is that?
Tortorella, you know, head coach of the Flyers right now. I mean, let me check where I've got him right now. Where is he right now? Torts? I got him ranked 38th all time, according to my present-day calculations. If you use the rating system I use now for pro football coaches, I've got Torts ranked 38th on the all-time list between Don Cherry and Badger Bob Johnson and the Pantheon. Anyone else was mentioned, Peter?
No, that's it. You got it.
Okay. Next question. Yeah. Next person.
Well, we're we have 5 minutes, and I want to continue with Paul Brown because here I'm in Cleveland and talk about him because, yeah, here in Cleveland we – you know, there's a tendency not to – that's why I'm so happy that you – anytime a guy writes a history book because in Cleveland, everyone's – there's a tendency to not know history and to have negative thinking. And I grew up here in the – I was like in the 70s and people were complaining, oh, we've never been to the Super Bowl, on and on, and oh, woe is us. And I didn't find out till years later through finally reading – the great – I'm sure you read PB of the Paul Brown biography.
Yeah.
And it's got a great picture of Paul Brown being carried on the field by Bengals players when they made the playoffs, something like that.
Yeah.
And anyway,
yeah.
So the story of Paul Brown is amazing. It's just – and you think, oh, my God, this is tremendous. You know, like you said, those – Cleveland. So, and that was forgotten in the 70s. I never heard that in the 70s.
Yeah.
The Browns 10 straight years – And I met Otto Graham at the Cleveland Airport, and I didn't even know that until I thought, oh man, I met this guy, 10-year career. And it's incredible what he did, and I was kicking myself but that's how it is. So that's why it's so wonderful that you've written these books, you know, because it's so I find it so boring this just focusing on right now and forgetting all the amazing things that have happened.
I think the problem with modern-day sports history is that if there's no videotape, you tend to ignore it. I think there's like a scorn of the pre-Super Bowl era, which I think is grossly unfair because you had some great teams and some great coaches who coached in the pre-Super Bowl era. George Halas, Paul Brown, Buddy Parker, Curly Lambeau, Ray Flaherty, Steve Owen, you know, in the early years of pro football. I think it's very unfair. I think you need to look back to the roots of the game, you know, to see that there were innovators there. I mean, Paul Brown was an innovator in terms of the classroom concept of teaching, the use of signal guards, the fact that he called his own plays. And, you know, in the beginning, he wasn't calling his own plays. It wasn't until like 48 or 49 that he started calling the plays for Otto Graham there. In the beginning, he let Otto call his own thing, but finally he took it over himself and maintained it that way. And the fact was, you know, people forget Otto Graham, in terms of the quarterback rating system, was the greatest quarterback of all time until he was surpassed by like Steve Young and Joe Montana, and I think maybe now some others. But in the early, in the 70s and 80s, he was still, in terms of the QB rating, he was the greatest quarterback of all time using that rating system there. I mean, that's how magnificent he was. I mean, in terms of passing, he was deadly accurate. He had magnificent peripheral vision. He could see his receivers. He always had a great complement of receivers in Donnie Lavelli, Ray Renfro, Max Speedy. You know, he could hit his backs, hitting Dub Jones out of the backfield there. He was a great button hook passer, could throw screens and all that. He could run, too, like in the 1954 NFL Championship game. He threw three touchdown passes, and he rushed for three touchdown passes. They're one of the greatest games of his life. In the last game he ever played, the 55 NFL Championship game, he rushed for two touchdown passes and threw three touchdown passes, went out a champion, which is the best way to go. I mean, in terms of perfection, I mean, he along with Bill Russell and Yogi Berra and Henri Richard have got to be close to the almost like perfect athletes of all time in terms of consistent excellence. 10-season career and all 10 times you made it to the championship game and 7 times you won it. I mean, he's tied with Tom Brady for the most championship rings as a player. I mean, Brady's got 7 rings and so is Otto Graham, and we tend to forget that fact.
Our guest has been Matthew DiBiase, author of 4 sports books, including the recent one that just came out, Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches, came out this year. It's been wonderful, amazing to have you on the show, Matthew. We'll see if we can schedule you to be on a month from 4 weeks from yesterday. We're usually on Tuesdays. The time has flown by. Matthew DiBiase, do you have any final words tonight for our audience?
Yes, my book is available on Amazon and only at Amazon. It's not available in stores. Just type in Lords of the Gridiron 2, Pro Football's Greatest Coaches, or my name, Matthew DiBiase, that's DiBiase, and it's on Amazon. And it's on sale at 30% off and will remain so until after the Super Bowl is played. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And we're just getting started here. We really didn't get through Paul Brown, but that's fine because we have comments from wonderful comments and questions from people. So this was amazing, just a wonderful having you on. We'll have you on regularly because you're just such a wealth of information. Matthew DiBiase, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Next week we're going to have Bill North on again for the sixth time, the MLB star from the 1970s, the leadoff hitter and center fielder for the coolest MLB team of all time, in my opinion, the Oakland A's from the early 1970s. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody.
Amen.
Thanks again, Mr. Matthew DiBiase.
Thank you, Peter. God bless you.
Oh, God bless you.